All right. Good evening, everybody. My name is Glenn. I'm the Wednesday night coordinator. As many of you may know, there's the fall retreat, so Tara is away on retreat. This evening, we have Susan Piver as a guest teaching tonight. Tara actually sent a short note. I think she was feeling that there might be a little bit of heaviness in the room, and so she wanted to convey these wishes to you. So this is from Tara. Dear ones, may we open to the realness of what arises in us, fear, distress, grief, whatever the intensity of feeling, with full presence and tenderness. May we find refuge in loving companionship. May the suffering of our time serve to awaken an engaged, living compassion. And may we be guided by the wisdom of Martin Luther King Jr. We must accept finite disappointment, but never lose infinite hope. With love and prayers, Tara. So I know she would have wanted to be here with you tonight. I can only imagine what's going on in retreat as people sit with that and work with that during retreat. So, Susan, welcome.
Thank you. And, Hello. So good to be together. I was going to give a talk based on my book, Start Here Now, but we have to immediately, because of the circumstances today, skip right over the beginning. We can't start here. We have to begin in the middle. So let me just ask, is there anyone who has never practiced meditation before, which is completely fine? Look at you people. Okay. So I wanted to focus this evening on the energy of the heart because there is so much heartbreak. And it's an incredibly fraught and tender time, and there's a lot of fear and agitation and shock and so on, and we are in fantastic shape because we have at our fingertips the practice that can help us return to balance in all cases, which is the practice of meditation, which we'll do. Instead of starting with a practice and then doing a talk, which I think is normally what you guys do, it's going to be a little more interwoven. I want to say a few things, then we'll practice, and I'll say a couple other things, and then I want to leave time for a conversation, because at a time like this, it's good to connect and share what we're experiencing. Please do not hesitate to cry. Please do not hesitate to offer Kleenex to someone who may be crying. It's so good to be in community at a time like this, so I thank you very much for being here, for yourself and for each other. And before I go any further, I don't want to leave out any non-heartbroken people. I think that's the best way to say it. So if you are a non-heartbroken person, you too are welcome. And perhaps you will be heartbroken in the future, and this will come in handy. I hope not. But seriously, all stripes are welcome. So let's look at heartbreak. First, just place your hand on your own heart. And if that feels weird and you don't want to do it, you don't have to. But just feel your own warmth. Feel your own tenderness and goodness and longing for a sane world. That is who you are. and the sadness that we may feel, you can place put your hand back down if you like, or keep it there, is inextricably woven with love. Because that is what heartbreak is. It's love and sadness together. If it was just love, it wouldn't feel like heartbreak. If it was just sadness, it would feel more like depression. But this particular state that many of us find ourselves in combines the fullness of our heart and the depths of our sorrow. So I thought it would be useful to look at what it means to have a broken heart and what the power is in such a state. Because as far as I can tell, and I actually did write a book about this called The Wisdom of a Broken Heart 5 or 6 years ago, it is a source of extraordinary power. And in the lineage I practice in, the Shambhala Buddhist tradition, it is considered the mark of the spiritual warrior, is a broken heart. And if your heart is not broken, your warriorship is considered untrustworthy, or in meaning conceptual, not ill-intended. So when your heart is broken, the following things are usually true. You are incredibly sensitive to everything in the environment. The slightest gesture of kindness fills your heart, and the slightest gesture of impoliteness, meaning just not seeing you, can topple you and make you feel despairing. So normally our range is something like this, but when our heart is broken, it is something like that, this. We can tell what other people feel much more readily in the state of heartbreak. We can read people. We can see the sorrow in their faces, or the lack of sorrow, or their indifference, whatever it may be, we can tell. In addition, there are three qualities Anno had mentioned. That's the first one, this sort of tenderness and sensitivity. The second thing that happens when your heart is broken is immediately everything in your life snaps into focus. You see clearly what you're doing with your life, the circumstance that you're in, the world that you live in. Whoop, suddenly we're seeing something we didn't really know. And whatever degree of BS you're engaged in, you know, diminishes by half at least. Your interest in non-essential activities or wasting your time disappears. You know, it'll come back. So don't be afraid. But suddenly, you're very awake. And the third quality I want to mention is whatever you thought was important 5 seconds ago or yesterday at 7 p.m., you now know probably isn't that important, because now we know that what is really important is how we treat each other, is love, and our ability to take care of each other, connect with each other, to reach across seemingly unbreachable divides, to find our way back together as a country. There's nothing more important. What I saw is that our real problem is not any policies or politicians that we might be subjected to. It's that we hate each other or suspect each other, to say it in a softer way. That's the problem. And no policy or politician can fix that. This is some work we each have to do in our hearts. So you're very sensitive and tender. Everything is clear. And you know that what is most important is to love and care for yourself and each other. So in Buddhist thought, these three qualities are connected to the activity of what is called a bodhisattva. Bodhi means awake, and sattva means being. A bodhisattva is someone who is here to serve, here to be of benefit, here to offer their gifts, here to, if you're hardcore and take the bodhisattva vow, to put others before yourself, which is very hard to even imagine, speaking for myself, maybe the same. It's the best I can do so far. So suddenly you're in the shoes of the bodhisattva when your heart is broken. You're in the shoes that someone like His Holiness the Dalai Lama walks in. The shoes that someone like my teacher, Sakyong Mipam Rinpoche, walks in. The shoes that Martin Luther King walked in. The shoes that someone like Gandhi walked in. That's where we are now. We see and feel those around us. We are awake. And we care. So this is a powerful place to find ourselves in. And it doesn't feel good, particularly. So the more we practice meditation, by the way, the more raw and open our hearts become. Which is maybe, has anybody noticed that? That as your practice progresses, you become a little more sensitive or a lot more sensitive. Things affect you. The boundary is more diffuse. Often that's surprising because we want to meditate because we want that wall to be thick and nothing can get through. You think, well, I will be a meditator. I will be a Zen person, a calm person, meaning someone for whom pain does not hurt. And that, of course, is not possible. So I remember once I was engaged in a lot of bodhisattva practices in a particular phase in my own personal practice, which you're never too far from that, but I was deeply engaged in this heart-opening practices, and I was a mess. I was just crying all the time, and I felt like I can't walk outside because I might see someone who scares me, and then I might start shaking and have to run away, or I might see someone who hurts my feelings, and then I will be so wounded, I won't be able to fulfill my responsibilities of this day. Or I might see someone who also has sorrow written all over their face, and it might wound me. So I asked myself, is this what the Dalai Lama is doing? Is he just like crying all the time? So I asked my teacher, again, Sakyong Mipam is his name, what I was doing wrong in my practice. Because I figured, I don't think he's running into his room and throwing himself on his bed and crying 5 times a day. So he said to me, among other things, some of the world's greatest meditators have cried a lot. So with that, he told me, and I hope to convey to you, that this tenderness of heart is a sign of progress along the path, and that you are not alone in discovering the truth of your own humanity, and that the great teachers who we may be fortunate enough to have access to have also been through this and done this. And the difference, I would say, between them and me, because I'm not going to speak for you, is that my heart opens when I feel safe, and it closes when I feel threatened. And then I try to relax a little bit, and it opens. And then it closes. And then it opens, and then it closes. My guess about His Holiness and other great teachers is they don't do that. It's just open. And they have somehow learned to stabilize in the open state. Just think about that for a second. What if your heart was open and stable? Who would you be? How would you approach the people in your life? What risks would you take? how would you feel about our country? How would you feel about the work that we now have to do to, I would say, get our country back? It would feel different if you knew your heart was open and stable. So the way to create that stability is through the practice of meditation, which we're going to do momentarily, and further through the practice of loving kindness meditation, metta in Pali or Maitri in Sanskrit. Who here has done loving kindness practice? Excellent. So maybe half or a little more. Well, we're going to do a little loving kindness practice today for ourselves and for our country. But first, I'll just tell you a little bit about loving kindness. It is an ancient practice. It is said to be more than 2,500 years old and given by the Buddha himself. And the way this practice came about is he had some monks and he would send them out, I guess, oh, you guys go meditate in this forest and you guys go to this cave. And I don't really know what he did, but somehow this one particular group of monks was sent to this one spot in the forest to establish their meditation container or mandala or environment or seats. And it did not go well for them. There were creatures that already lived there, and they were not pleased. So they did everything they could to get the monks to, like, disappear. They threw things at them. And these, according to the story, are physical beings and immaterial beings, which are scarier, I would guess. They threw things at them. They made loud noises when they were trying to meditate. They shook trees and threw rocks and made, I don't know why this always makes me laugh, they made horrible stench. Because, you know, if someone's going to throw a rock at you, you might go like this, but if it was really stinky, you might really want to get out. So that was it for the monks. They went back to the Buddha and they said, please, this location will not work. What else you got? And he said, well, actually, go back and do this practice, the practice of loving kindness, which we're going to do. And according to the story, not only did these enemies, these beings, stop harassing the monks, they flipped completely and turned into their protectors. So this practice has the capacity to turn enemies into family, which seems unthinkable right now. And I understand why it does. So when you do loving kindness practice, the traditional way is you think about yourself first. My guess is that when the Buddha gave this practice, he might have thought to himself, well, let's see, how can I help them get into the loving kindness groove? Well, I'll tell them, start with yourself, because who doesn't like themselves? And maybe 2,500 years ago that was true, but now I think that's the hardest for us. Nonetheless, we begin with ourselves, we connect with our own pain, our own sorrow, our own suffering, and we wish ourselves well through a series of phrases, may I be happy, may I be healthy, and so on. I'll guide you through it, and we'll keep it short, because it's been a long day, and probably most of you didn't sleep well, or at least were up late. Then you think about someone you love, who, just like you, is struggling, trying to be happy, and you want them to be happy, because you love them. So you wish for them the same things, may you be happy and healthy, and so on. Then you think of someone that's called a stranger. And that means someone who you know a little, but you don't have any feelings about them, positive or negative. You don't know them. They're neutral, sometimes called the neutral person. But they're just like you and your loved one. They're freaking out. Or they will freak out. Or they used to freak out. So you can wish for them the same things because they're not any different than you. And then the final person is what's called an enemy. And this is someone who you don't like. You could even hate them. I know sometimes it upsets people to hear the word hate, but I sometimes feel hate. So it might be someone you hate, dislike, someone who has harmed you, someone you're angry at. It doesn't have to be the worst person you ever thought of, but it could be. But in this practice, we think, well, I'm just trying to be happy. My loved one is just trying to be happy. Probably this stranger is just trying to be happy. Well, this enemy, too, is just trying to be happy. This doesn't mean we have to like them or forgive them or even stop hating them. But it means we can find a point of connection with them. And this connection means everything, because the evils of our world stem from the us and them divide. And anything we can do to heal that, because there's no them, there is only us, will create a greater likelihood of peace. And us doesn't mean getting all snuggly with people. It just means acknowledging them with all your feelings about them. So even though your enemy goes about creating happiness in the word my mother would use, and my personal mother is here, hi mom, because I grew up here, they go about it in some fakakta ways, they are still trying to do what we're trying to do. So we can find a point of commonality with them somehow. And then we wish this for all beings. So the practice is bookended with a minute or two, a couple minutes of breath awareness practice, which I'll guide us through. And then we do our loving kindness practice, and then we end with just a minute or two of breath awareness. And this breath awareness bookending is very important because we want to approach our loving kindness with a sense of spaciousness. So first we want to sort of settle. So we were settling already. This is great. Before we begin, I just want to say one thing that I want to encourage you to stop thinking about meditation in case this is something you're worried about. It's the biggest misconception I've ever found about meditation practice. You probably know it anyway. Is that in order to meditate, you have to stop thinking. And you don't. Absolutely not. That would be crazy. Because your mind exists to produce thoughts. And just like your eyes exist to see, and if I ask you right now to look out through your eyeballs, what you're doing right now, or if you're visually impaired, to hear out through your ears, please try not to see anything. Or hear anything. It's very, very frustrating. And we want to pick our battles in meditation, and this is not the one to pick. So you do not have to stop thinking. Your mind is going to continue to make thoughts. No problem. We just take a different relationship to our thoughts. Does that make sense? You probably knew that anyway. Okay. So to begin your practice, please establish your posture. And it just basically means to sit up straight. Your feet can be flat on the floor if you're in a chair, or you can sit cross-legged on a chair. And people are sitting on the floor, cross-legged or kneeling, all of that's great, fine. And we want to sit up straight because we want to begin our practice by proclaiming our dignity. And just by taking this upright posture, we can connect with that sense of dignity. The hands rest on the legs, palms down, just a little bit above the knee. Or if you have some other hand position that you're used to in your practice, that's fine. But this is the most comfortable usually, and it gives you a little support for your back. Soften your belly, the area around your heart. The chin is tucked a little bit, so the back of the neck is long. And as people who practice with me may know, my favorite part, your mouth is closed, because you don't have to talk. And it is so heavenly to not have to say anything, but to be with each other. So fill with your own silence. Relax the muscles of speech, the jaw, the tongue, and so on, and relax the inclination to speak. The breath is natural in and out through the nose. You are already breathing before I gave that instruction, so keep doing that, please. And the eyes can be open or closed. In the practice I do, the eyes are open. And if you want to experiment with that, you can. And if you don't want to, you don't have to. But if your eyes are open, let the gaze be cast down to a spot a few feet in front. And let the eyes be very soft. And whatever distance you're gazing at, see if you can focus your gaze in the middle distance. Feel yourself breathing. And let your attention rest on the cycle of breath. So your attention rides in on the inhale and flows out on the exhale. The next inhale will just happen, I promise. And just begin again. Feeling the breath. Your mind will continue to think things. Most of your thoughts will not distract you from your breath. They'll just sort of come and go. But if at any point you notice that you are absorbed in thought and have forgotten about your breath, that is fine. It's actually great because you just woke up and saw where you were. So simply let that thought go, or that line of thought. Gently, kindly, respectfully bring your attention back to the breath, like you were escorting someone to their seat. Please take my arm, come on back. And take a fresh start. And in meditation, you are allowed, when it comes to fresh starts, an infinite amount. So we'll just sit together for a minute or so. And let's begin our loving kindness practice. You can relax your posture if you like. You can stay in your formal posture. If your eyes are open, you can close them, or you may leave them open. And I would like to ask you to begin by connecting with what you feel. The confusion, the shock, the fear. These are all optional, by the way. You may feel some of them or all of them. The sadness, anger. However you feel today in our post-election world. And recognize how hard you work to make this world, your world, a decent place. And how this may feel like someone has just pushed you back. But feel your longing anyway for a good human society. And wish for yourself, may I be happy. Say to yourself silently, may I be happy. See what it feels like to wish happiness for yourself on this day. May I be safe. May I feel protected and safe. May I feel at home in my world. In my country, may my country feel like home. Now, please bring to mind someone you love who is also struggling with the circumstances of this day, for whatever reason. Someone who, when you think of them, your heart just softens. There's no question that you want them to be happy. That impulse, that wish for their happiness comes into your mind the moment they do. Could be a child, a parent, a partner, a friend, an animal. Someone who may be harmed by the current circumstance. And is struggling, and wish for this person, see their face in your mind's eye. May you be happy. I long for your happiness. May you be safe. Protected, held, safe. May you feel at home in your country, in your world. Now, please bring to mind a stranger, someone who you just don't have feelings about, but you kind of know them, but you don't have positive or negative feelings about them. But you can know that just like you and your loved one, it is likely that they are experiencing confusion, sorrow, fear. They're scared. And you can wish for this person too, without knowing anything more about them, that other than that they are just like you. Wish for them, may you be happy, completely happy. May you be safe. May you feel at home in your country. Sort of bathe them in that wish. Now let them go and bring to mind an enemy, someone who you do not care for, you do not like, even violently dislike, someone who may have hurt you or someone you know, could be someone you know or it could be someone that you know of, and look at them. And imagine that whatever insane things they do, underneath, like you, your loved one, the stranger, they are also simply trying to find a way to be happy and feel safe, because all beings have that in common. Not just humans, but animals and so forth. So just acknowledging that, see what it feels like to wish for them. May you be happy. May you find contentment and happiness. May you be safe from harm. May you feel at home in your country, in your world. Now let this person go. We have two more short steps. The next one is, imagine all the people who voted opposite you. People on the other side, whoever they may be, and know that they are no different in this one way. And they are mothers, and they are fathers, and they are sons and daughters, and friends and lovers, and aunts and uncles, just like us. And wish for them, for all who voted opposite you. May all who voted opposite me be happy. May all who voted in the opposition be safe. And may all in the opposition feel at home in their country. welcomed and at ease. And now think of everyone who voted as you did, or who believes as you do, whether you voted or not. Your tribe, your people, many of whom are here. And for them, for us, for whoever you think of as us, may we be happy. May we be safe and feel protected and unafraid. May we feel at home in our country, in our world. Accepted and loved. And finally, for all beings everywhere who struggle with finding a place in the world, and I'm not just talking about people, but I'm also talking about animals, may all beings be happy. Your heart is big enough to wish that. May all beings be safe. May all beings feel at home in their country or their world. Now, please let this practice go and just sit with your own breath for a few moments. Return to your formal posture if you are no longer in it. Let the loving kindness technique go completely. And allow your attention to ride the breath. Together. Thank you very much. I would love to hear if you have any reflections or questions, but I want to close by sharing with you a quote from the Tibetan meditation master, Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche, who said, "The only true elegance is vulnerability." And I just invite you to contemplate and explore that as you relate with your own sense of vulnerability. That it is not a problem. It is the only true elegance.
I wanted to comment. It's maybe contrary, that sort of thing. I thought we were dealing with fear. That we were fear, afraid. And now our deepest fear may be confirmed. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you might go beyond and pass through the fear, mm-hmm. wash out of the fear.
Mm-hmm. I'll repeat this. So he said he likes to be contrary. And he said, what is your name?
Steve.
Steve says that he thought we were dealing with fear. And to paraphrase, and correct me if I get it wrong, that wouldn't it be good to find a way to deal with fear and move past fear? Is that accurate? Yeah, that would be awesome. So there is no way out. There is only a way through. And the way to work with fear, I would say, as with any emotion, is to feel it. Feel it. Not comfortable. And feel it. By feel it, I mean feel it in your body. Does it make you shake? Does it make your shoulders go like this? Does it feel like something's stabbing you in the chest? Do you feel like you want to hide under something? Like, is your body going like this? So feeling it in this way means as it manifests in your body, as opposed to the storyline of why you are afraid. Because that has no end. But as you start to feel the sensation of fear or rage or sadness, you see that it's kind of like your breath. It has an ebb and a flow. Your attention strays from it, and then you can bring it back. And when your attention goes into, well, I wouldn't be afraid if this didn't happen, or I shouldn't be afraid, I should be brave, or I'll never feel safe again, or it's this person's fault, or it's that, this is the reason, that all may be totally viable, but not as part of a metabolization process to help you move through and past something. It actually seems to exacerbate. So I'm not saying we shouldn't think about what we feel. It's truly valuable and critical. But in order to begin the metabolization process of the moving past that you were wondering about, this is the first step. To feel the feelings, as Pema Chodron has said, and drop the story. It's a much bigger space. So yeah. Practice helps you feel what you actually feel. Sit with it. Does that answer your question? Sort of. Think about it. Be contrary. That's totally cool. Because it doesn't have to make sense, and that might not work for you. But that's what I have to offer on it. What else? Yes. There's going to be a mic coming to you so everyone can hear you. Hi.
First, I wanted to say that you were the teacher for my first ever meditation class.
Aww, that makes
so
me so
hi.
Happy. Hi. It's nice to see you again.
And nice to see you too.
Thank you.
And not that you haven't addressed this, but you know, my head is spinning some, so I'm looking for a context or meaning to hold not only really what's happened, but what might happen in the next 4 years mm-hmm. and longer. Mm-hmm. Because I realize part of a big part of what I'm feeling is helpless, mm-hmm. is a lack of control that I have no control over literally my own safety mm-hmm. and what could happen to this country. Mm-hmm. War, who knows? Mm-hmm. And I had just reached a point where I was able to feel safety and a strength in my person, mm-hmm. which had been a long challenge. And now this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry that you are re-experiencing trauma or threat in your experientially or in your imagination or your fear. So the first part of your question was, is there something you can do? A context to hold it in. Mm-hmm. Understanding how you might hold or relate with everything that might happen. So I sort of have a two-part answer. One is part of the spirit of the question, I think, is best answered by a therapist. So that would be really important. But when it comes to a Buddhist-y kind of answer, you know, there is no way to do anything but relate with how you feel and trust yourself. And remember that there is nothing that is not impermanent. I'm not saying that as a panacea or a patch, but I'm saying it more not that our government is impermanent, which it is, but that doesn't really help to think about that, but that what you feel is impermanent and that what you fear may come true and it may not. And the more you're able to relax, which doesn't mean feel comfortable, it means allow and be awake and pay attention. That is synonymous with relaxing. The better able you'll be to take care of yourself. And I wish you well, and may you be safe. And when we're afraid, we feel helpless. And I gather that from what you're saying, I feel helpless. So when we feel helpless, we try to get something to make us feel stable. It's quite human, and sometimes it works. But the surefire, this may sound oversimplified, but the surefire way to recover a sense of agency is to express generosity. Because generosity itself is a gesture of power and richness. And fear and wanting something to assuage that fear, which of course we all have, and I hope something will, you feel poverty stricken. I'm not saying that at all as in a pejorative way. But to counterbalance that, if you find someone else who is afraid as you are, especially helpful, afraid in exactly the same way you are, and try to help them in some way by saying hello, by giving them a book, by asking them how they are, by looking at them with kindness, could be tiny, you feel that you're drawing on your richness rather than your, you know, an empty hole that needs something. So the generosity and kindness to others is not like just a sweet thing. It is an empowering thing. And it is almost always better for you than for the person on the receiving end, or at least as good. So connect with your strength as well as your vulnerability. I hope it will go easily for you. You're welcome. Yes.
You spoke about the clarity that can come from a feeling of heartbreak.
Mm-hmm.
And I would ask for your advice once the heartbreak starts to end, to maintain that sense of clarity, because the things that I have realized are important to me and that I want in my life in the past 24 hours, I don't want that sense of urgency around those things to fade as the heartbreak mends.
Very good question. Did everybody hear that? Yeah. Well, this may sound a little flip, and I don't mean it this way, but something else will come along to break your heart and will remind you of what's important. So there's that. But there's also other people. Your sangha, your friends, your colleagues, whoever shares these priorities with you, once, even if you look at them or think of them, sometimes it comes back when you're engaged in an effort with someone, and then you just think of them, oh, you remember. So we forget constantly. It's not because there's anything wrong with us, it's because we have busy lives and we get distracted and we're human beings. But if we can build in some formal way of remembering our priorities, when the sense of emotional, like, edginess starts to fade, which is nice, sometimes the intensity of your commitment to your principles can fade with it. But if we find other ways to remember that intensity, again, either through dialoguing with people, reading something, journaling. I remember for like 3 or 4 years, I journal usually most mornings, and I would write down my 3 priorities, not for the day, for my life, and they were always the same 3. I probably wrote them down every morning for like 5 years, because I would forget them. I would like to write a book. You know, like things that you think, oh, I'm not going to forget that. But I did. So just even that simple, I'm going to write those three things down and see, how do I feel about them today? How do they strike me today? Where is my inspiration right now? It's very rich. It's disappeared. Fine. I'm coming back tomorrow. And trust each other. Count on each other. That's the most important. You're welcome. Yes?
If you don't mind my asking, what were your three priorities?
Oh, why do you ask? I'm happy to tell you, but why do you ask? I'm curious. Okay, well, my first priority was, I would like to write a book about meditation. It's out there now. I have an online community that had, I think at the time I started doing this, about 5,000 people in it. I would like to build that to 15,000 people, and now it's close to 20,000. And I would like to be a really friggin' awesome wife, because I forget about relating to other people often. So I want to be a good partner. That one will always be on the list. But they're very personal, so thank you for asking. One more, maybe, if there is. How did it feel to practice loving kindness? Did it help? Okay, good. Is there some? Oh, up. Okay.
I want to say thank you to the first person who spoke, because those were my sentiments in the middle of the night. And your response, you know, where she was afraid and terrified. Our world was, my world was upside down. Uh-huh. And in her sharing, what did you say? You told her to find gratefulness, I think?
Generosity.
Generosity. Uh-huh. And I received her generosity in sharing. And that was big. And I think coming here tonight, I mean, I came here, I'm a sporadic comer of here. Here I am.
Hi, I see you.
But anyway, I just came here to feel like the world isn't as crazy and upside down as I thought it was, and that there will be a room full of people who echo the fear and at the same time are looking for stability. So I thank you.
Look, your generosity was returned with her generosity of kindness and appreciation. Thank you very much for that. And that does seem to be how it works. Generosity begets, patience begets, aggression begets. If you want, you know, be the change you want to see in the world, as I think it was Gandhi who said, it's very straightforward what that means. So I want to thank you for being here. It's an honor, an unexpected privilege to be able to spend time with you on this upside down day. And I have complete confidence in you as a community and in your ability to care for each other and to work with your own experience for the benefit of yourself and the people you love, and your practice will support you to do that. So let's just close formally by taking a moment and feeling the people in the room. You can look around, you can just feel their presence, and wish them well. Rouse the aspiration that they will be happy, that they will feel safe, and at home in their country. Thank you.